guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Big Move podcast. I am your host, Em, from the beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. So today I am here with my guest, Chloe Watts. With a background in tech, Chloe taught herself how to code as a teen and has never looked back. She uses this passion to help influencers build, maintain their blogs, and provide technical training in a way that is helpful and they can understand. She founded Chloe Digital in 2014, a full-service strategy, support, and technology provider. It remains the leading membership for digital influencers, helping over hundreds of incredible women worldwide with tech support and strategic planning services. Featured by Birdie, Who What Wear, Bloglovin, and Teen Vogue, Chloe is a web developer, influencer marketing guru, and a total fashionista. Chloe, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Em.
Thanks for coming on over. excited to have you. So we'll just get right into it.
A couple little
icebreaker questions. So the first is, what is your favorite destination for a proper holiday? I've just gone very British on you.
That's what happens when you're around me. Do you know what? It's so funny because I was thinking, I haven't been on a proper holiday in so long. And I was thinking, where would be my ultimate destination? So I've got to say the Caribbean, because my family are from the Caribbean. My dad's from Jamaica, my mom's from St. Lucia. So I feel like whenever I do get time to have a break, that's where I want to go.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's a nice place to kind of go back to.
Yes, too. Very nice. Beautiful.
Nice. Okay, second icebreaker. What is your favorite London coffee shop?
So for me, coffee is the devil because it gives me mad anxiety and also heart palpitations. So I actually stopped drinking coffee a few years back and it's been amazing for me. So I'm very much a lemon and ginger girl. Like I'll have a lemon and ginger and I'll feel a buzz. Like that's my body. But if I'm getting it, I'll probably be at a Soho House somewhere.
Okay, fair enough. I know, I feel like they do it right over there.
Yeah.
Teas, like lemon, ginger and all that. Okay, interesting. I love it. So we'll kind of talk about your background, where you're from. So you are London born and bred. Can you tell us about just sort of where you grew up and what that was like?
Yeah. Sure thing. So I was born in North London and I was also raised in North London in a town called Edmonton, which is very far north. Edmonton N9, if anybody knows it. When you're from London, you always say your postcode because that's like where you're represented.
Totally. It is quite the thing here. Yeah. I'm always like W1.
Which is sweet. So yeah, N9 was where I was born and raised. And then my family lived there all until when I went to university and then we moved just outside of London, which was such a big deal for us. But yeah, it was a great town. It had all the amenities that you wanted and I didn't really know anything different.
Okay, perfect. And that's where you're still living currently?
No, so I've lived many places now. And now I actually live in Northwood, which is Northwest London.
Okay, perfect. Is that by like St. John's Wood or not quite?
Further,
like way further out.
Further out.
All right, cool. I tend to stay in the little central bubble, which is pretty lame. So, okay, cool. And so you've lived here your entire life. What do you love most about London life?
I love that London is so multicultural. I mean, I've been to many, many places in my life. I actually studied in Sunderland, which is near Newcastle up north. And it was a very different place than London. And it made me, it was the first time that I really appreciated London for what it is. And it's such a beautiful city. And I, you know, I'm really lucky to travel to so many different places. And when I get to get on the plane and, you know, I mean, for you, maybe a bit different, but when I get on the plane and you're coming back to Heathrow and you always hear all the English accents and people are from London, you're like, oh, it's amazing to be home. Like, it's just such a nice space and it makes other people feel welcome and it always makes me feel good.
Totally. And so you're obviously quite, you know, well-traveled. We'll get into sort of Chloe Digital, but I know you guys have employees all over. Are there any other cities that you would consider living or like aspire to live anytime?
Yeah, I'd probably say if I was going to live in another city, it'd be Los Angeles. only because I go there so often and we have many clients there, we have many partners there. And sometimes I feel like a week in LA versus a month here, I'm doing way more. But the heat for me sometimes is just too much. You'd think from my parents being from the Caribbean, I could take heat, but I can't. Like I'm a proper London girl. Yeah. So in the summer months in LA, it's like torture. But I think if I was to live anywhere else, it would be there.
Okay, cool. I completely agree. I have family that live in Santa Barbara. Mm. Like California life is just, it's this like dream. Hopefully I end up there one day. I feel you.
Yeah, it's a different pace. But at the same time, I do feel that in LA, people are very entrepreneurial, mm-hmm. even though the pace is so different from London. So
they totally are. Really like it. And it's like a creative and tech hub, of course, and it has kind of a great mix of everything.
Exactly.
Totally. So we'll kind of get right into your background and your career. So interesting that you are a coder, a web developer. You are the first that's come on the podcast. So this is exciting. But when and how did you learn how to code?
Sure. So I taught myself how to code as a teenager, and I think it was about 15 or 16. And it was during the MySpace era. So I'm 30 now. So I'm guessing MySpace was about 15, 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you had to do a little bit of coding to make your profile look cute. So if you wanted like different colored backgrounds, or you wanted music, or you wanted things like that, you had to do a bit of coding. And I really enjoyed it. I didn't know it was a thing. I didn't know people did it as a career. I didn't know anything about the future, but I just knew at the time I just loved it so much. I loved being able to write something and then it turn into something creative.
Yeah.
So I really got the bug from then. And from there, I used to spend a lot of time on the family computer in the kitchen, you know, asking my mom, can I go on the internet? And I'd research, you know, how to make a website, and I'd look at the source code of websites and print out the source code and try to read what the different lines meant and how that actually constituted to make a site. And I just really fell in love with it. And it was so interesting that I fell in love with it because I didn't know anybody else that was in love with coding. But that's just the thing, really, as like a human being, when you find a passion, you just kind of go after it, even though you don't fully understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you literally were sitting there just like kind of searching and just scouring the internet, teaching yourself. That's literally kind of how you did it.
That was exactly it. I didn't have any formal training at the time. And as I said, it wasn't even something that I thought I could go into school and tell my teachers, this is something I'm interested in, because no one had ever mentioned it to me before. So I just would use the internet. And at that time, there was no YouTube, or I think Google might have just started or something.
So yeah, seriously.
Yeah, so you'd go on like Arts Jeeves, or you go on like Yahoo and like try to search for things.
Yeah.
Or you'd go on forums to try and find tutorials and stuff. But I just loved it so much. And really and truly, my background, I've always loved kind of techie things and gadgets and stuff like that. You know, I always loved computers or the latest phone. You know, back then, no one had like, you know, Android and iPhone. We all had our Nokias and our Motorolas. And I used to be obsessed with technology. So I think kind of coding came from that.
Totally. Oh my gosh, Nokia. You remember the Razor phone, like the hot pink?
I had the orange Razor, and it was my life.
Oh my gosh. Talk about nostalgia. Okay, so from there, where did your career really start, would you say? Or what was your first job?
So I'd say my career really started with coding after university. So I went to university and my course was for television and radio, because I have a lot of family members who are in the media space and I always loved media. And because I didn't know that coding was a thing, I thought, okay, well, I could probably get into television or radio. So I went to university for that course. And actually on the first day of university, I found out that there was a sister course that had what they called at the time new media, which was coding. So it was a big shock for me because I thought, okay, well, people actually learn how to do this, that you don't just teach yourself. You know, I didn't know anything about computer science or nothing like that. So I switched course on the first day and then I started to learn how to code. The course was terrible, but in the background, I was just learning to teach myself, doing little jobs here and there, just trying to brush up on my skills. So by the time I left university and I was looking for an internship, as any 21-year-old, you love to party, you love to have fun. And there was this company that they did promotion for nightclubs. And I remember reaching out to them to say, you know, I'm looking for an internship. with coding, that do you need anybody to code the websites for the nightclubs? And they were like, yeah. So then I got an internship there. I ended up staying there for maybe 2 years. And I went from an intern to obviously an employee. And my first kind of coding gig was building the websites for Mihiki, Whiskey Miss, and all kind of the biggest nightclubs of the era.
Oh my gosh. And that was all local. So around like London.
Yeah, that was all London.
Scene. Uh-huh. Okay, cool. So as you were sort of going through this, I feel like it's, coding has been kind of mainly dominated in the past, would you say? Are there a lot more female coders nowadays? Has that like kind of changed a bit since you started out?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, when I first started, I didn't really know that there wasn't a lot of female coders because I didn't know anybody, male or female. And as I started to grow in my career, so after that first job, I actually then started to work for a larger agency, and there was over 100 developers there and a very small handful were women. That was my first kind of entry to see that, oh, wow, actually, there's not actually a lot of women out here. And especially like me, because I was always known for, you know, when people used to see me at that job, they would never think I was on the dev team. They used to think that I was on the creative team.
Sure.
So it was very abnormal at the time. But there's been so many amazing initiatives over the years to really help young girls understand that there's a career for them in coding. And that's something that I always start to, try to preach as well.
Totally. And I'm sure so many more resources now. Yeah. And courses.
Oh, yeah. Crazy and more resources. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. And then so why and when did you decide to launch Chloe Digital?
So the reason why I launched Chloe Digital, well, I always wanted to run a business. My parents always preached to me about financial freedom and running a business, and I never truly understood it. I knew I wanted to create something. I didn't know if I'd create it within a company or needed to create the company myself, but I did know I wanted to create something. And what I found was, because I was that intersect and I loved coding so much, but also I loved fashion so much, and it was so different from the people that were around me, I realized that this is something that I need to bring to the forefront because I'm seeing myself to be so different than others. And usually when you do think about starting your own business, you do find that type of niche where you think, actually, if no one else is doing it, then it's almost like a calling that I must do it, you know? So it's not really a selfish reason. It's more selfless to think that, okay, well, that doesn't exist and I should fill that gap. So because I was developing and I was making sites and whatnot, back then, so maybe my early 20s, I had a lot of friends who were bloggers. So the blogging scene was kind of starting to rise in London. I'd go to a lot of fashion and technology events, a lot of, you know, lunches and all that type of jazz. And whenever I'd meet a blogger and they'd ask what I do, they'd say, oh, you know, what's your blog? And I'd say, oh, I don't have a blog. I'm actually a web developer. And then they'd usually freak out because there was an error on their site that they haven't been able to fix for so long. And when they explained to me what the problem was, I was able to tell them in a very easy way what it was and how they could solve it. It usually at the time was because people didn't know they shouldn't put very large images on their blog. So they take a picture with their new camera and then they put like a 10 gigabyte image onto their blog, and then it would be really, really slow. So I tell them, okay, you can't do that. You've got to optimize the image first before you put it onto the site. So I was kind of just doing that willy-nilly and just helping out my friends. At the same time, I was freelancing and kind of doing different gigs to just build up my experience. And at the time, I was using Chloe Digital as kind of like my freelancer name. You know, my name was Chloe and I like digital things. It was that simple at the time. And so, yeah, whenever you work as an agency, as a developer, a lot of the time you do a lot of freelancer gigs just to build up your skills. So the last job that I did have, they actually let me go because they were merging, and therefore anybody who had recently joined the company was made redundant. So I had to leave that company. And at that time I decided, okay, well, let me just build up on this freelancing thing and just start to make Chloe Digital more of a thing. Cause I was starting to be known as that girl who could help bloggers with their websites. That was the title. So when I was doing that, I realized, okay, it's fun. I love helping my friends, but I don't really see a lot of money in it because it only took me 5 minutes. So I can't really charge. I felt bad charging them for that.
Sure.
And then one night I kind of had an epiphany of kind of creating a community, a membership whereby they could pay monthly and then get all the tech support that they needed so that they could rest assured that we always had their back and I could also make money from doing what I loved. So in December 2014, I launched Chloe Digital as a tech support membership at the time, whereby bloggers could get that type of tech support. And then as time went on, we started to include digital strategy as well.
Okay, cool. Mm. Yeah. And I completely get that. Cause right. Like you were saying, you're like, you're helping out your friends, you're giving them quick tips, this and that. But right. I feel like the membership kind of setup makes a lot of sense, especially for like aspiring bloggers, people that might need like a little bit of help, but maybe they have a little bit of background in tech. So that's really interesting. Are there any things that you sort of wish that you knew back in like the very early days of launch? You guys have been around for how long now?
So 5 years.
5 years. Okay. So kind of looking back, I guess, on like year one.
I wouldn't say so because it's one of those things that you have to experience things and you have to learn. And if you didn't experience them, then you didn't learn. So it was so exciting to start something and to have people sign up. You know, when we got our first sign up, I was just crying. I just couldn't believe that somebody wanted to pay me money to help them on their website because I was doing it for free for so long. And as we started to get more and more members, I really was so happy that I launched it as a membership because a real community started to form, which to this day still exists. And that to me is one of the most amazing things because mostly within the blogging and the influencer scene, it's mostly women, and women really thrive off having community and having other women around them to support them. So to be able to kind of create that infrastructure for women, for me, is amazing. So I wouldn't say there's anything I would have done differently.
Okay, cool. I actually kind of appreciate that answer because you learned so much along the way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of made Chloe Digital what it is
exactly
today. How about any sort of like big challenges in sort of its infancy?
Well, the first kind of challenge I'd say was obviously money. So the great thing for me was I was able to bootstrap the company because I had the skills needed to launch it. So I had the technological skills and I want to say design skills. I think if my designers hear this, they'll think, Chloe, what design skills? But at the time, you know, it was very basic design skills that enabled me to help the bloggers in the beginning. So for the first, I think maybe 20 members, I was doing it all by myself and making the tweets on their website, sending them emails, etc. But I wanted to be able to hire people and I wanted to be able to scale. So that was a challenge at first because I realized, okay, well, it's not scalable if I do everything myself. I need to get to a point where there's enough money in the bank that I can hire my first person so that I can grow the company. So that was quite challenging in the beginning.
Yeah, that's fair. And do you have maybe like a number one tip of advice for anyone looking to launch their own tech company?
I'd say if you want to launch any type of company, you need to really find your niche because there's obviously so many different companies out there and you will have competitors. So you really want to find your niche, if not your micro niche, so that you can actually stand out from others. But I'd always compel people to start whatever they kind of have a passion for in their mind. Because like I said, with me, there was that gap and no one was filling it. So I needed to.
Totally. And I was obviously perusing your website and I loved your sort of mission statement for Chloe Digital. Can you kind of share that with the audience?
Sure. So my mission statement for Chloe Digital is pretty much my own mission statement in life. And I'm so connected to it. And it's really about empowering women to build digital empires with technology. And that really came from the fact that I was empowered all those years ago when I was 16, 17 years old with technology to build my own digital empire. So whatever I can do and whatever tech that I can build to then help those women, I'm all for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And it really feels like you guys are cultivating this sort of community. I mean, you have so many different influencers. You feature them too all the time. Because you guys have your own blog as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. So primarily, who are your clients kind of in a nutshell? Are they all bloggers? Are they fashion bloggers? Is it like a certain set of, I guess, prototype of bloggers, would you say?
Yeah. So they're all different type of amazing amazing people. And I emphasize, amazing, because every time somebody new signs up and I just research them and I think, oh my God, this woman is so amazing. And I think people are amazing for all different reasons, because they've just, you know, left their job and they've started blogging full time, or they've just had their first kid, or just something made, they've gone through heartbreak or something's happened and they've been able to pull themselves through. To me, that makes an amazing woman. So we have clients who are in the fashion space, beauty, lifestyle, mummy, travel, food, different types, because we, you know, we do fundamental things that help them all. We help them with tech support and we also help them with digital strategy. So it doesn't really matter what the genre is, we're able to help.
Yeah.
But it's nice to be able to have such a wide range. I mean, we even have an amazing woman who has a blog about making cupcakes for her dog, which I always talk about because I think it's so cool.
Yeah, it's so niche. Sugar.
Yes, amazing. And yeah, so we help all different types of bloggers.
Okay, cool. And two bloggers from all over the world. So you told me that you guys actually work remote and that you have a team kind of all over the world. So Where are those team members sort of based?
So all over. There's 15 of us and we range from the Philippines to Greece to America to Paraguay to England, all over the world.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And then those team members are servicing bloggers, obviously, from all over, from tech support to strategizing,
yes,
to kind of like all of that.
Exactly. So with the tech support side, it's us looking after their website, making it backed up, fixing any problems that they face with the websites, and also actually helping them take their website to the next level, whether it's site design or any large feature extensions that they need for the website, because we have a full service team. And then with the digital strategy, we really help them with strategic planning for their business. So understanding what their goals are as a business and then helping them achieve those, whether they be growth goals, monetary goals, community goals. We help them with all of those.
Okay, cool. And as far as the tech support goes, what are some of the most common issues that sort of come across your desk for most of your clients?
So I'd say one of the most common issues is really bad hosting. A lot of people buy cheap hosting. So, you know, you'll see an advert and it's like $1.99 for a year for hosting. You think, oh, that's amazing, I'll sign up. But it's kind of like hiring a bad builder for your shop. Like, why would you do that? And then the shop will crumble.
Right.
So you have to have the right foundations if you're building a website and that website houses your business. And we often find that people, you know, fall for that trap and use really bad hosting, and often their site goes down and there's issues based around their hosting issues.
Okay, cool. And then you mentioned images being too large, and I can completely raise my hand right there and relate to that, because I completely ran into this. And then I had a freelance developer helping me, and she's like, your images are way too big, Em. Like, you need to shrink them down. So it sounds like that is another one. But I always struggled with that, because if I shrunk them down myself, sometimes I felt like it would lose quality. But obviously your team is a team of experts, so anyone can handle kind of an issue like that.
Yeah, you've got to find the right balance, because that usually is people's fear. And they're like, I just need my images to be sharp. But it's like, okay, well, so if people can't see your images because your site's down all the time, then does it really matter? So it's about finding that balance where it stays sharp, but it doesn't really lose quality, but it's still optimized.
Totally. That makes complete sense. So when it comes to a blogger, influencer, or entrepreneur, kind of anyone kind of launching their blog or website, what would you say are some of the most important things to have buttoned up sort of from the get-go? Is it design? Is it branding? Is it aesthetic? What are your thoughts on that?
So I'd say the most important thing is to understand why you're launching the site in the first place. And I feel like it might be an easy thing to say, but most people don't think about that, especially when launching a blog. They might see that others are doing it. It's a popular industry. I want to join it. I just have a great sense of style, so I'm going to start my own site. And to me, that's not deep enough, because you most likely won't continue after a period of time. You'll get bored. You won't feel that buzz anymore, and then that will be the end. So for me, the why is always the most important in anything, in any business and starting anything, because therefore, whenever you're not feeling it, you'll always reconnect yourself back to the why. So as long as you know what it is and you've got that key niche, everything else kind of falls into place. Like, I would never say the most important thing is to have the most beautiful looking site. Of course, for me, I want every site in the world to look beautiful. But I've seen many people's websites that are very, very successful and the websites are ugly.
Sure.
And because they've got their niche and they're connecting to a community and to an audience, and that audience loves what they have to say, so they don't care that the buttons are a wrong color.
Sure.
So for me, that's one of the base. And then on top of that, it's obviously making sure that you're getting the right foundations for the site, so the right hosting, the right support, to make sure that if anything does go wrong, you've kind of got that protection.
Totally. So tech support is obviously huge.
Yes.
I mean, I can definitely
say that.
Yeah, absolutely. I can speak from experience too. It's just having, you know, that person, or in your case, an agency that can back you up, because you run into things that you can't expect.
Exactly. All the time, people run into things that they can't expect. I mean, at this point now, no one really emails in about something that we've never seen before. But for them, it's like such a huge deal when something happens because they've never seen it before.
Right.
And yeah, you can't, if it's something that isn't your expertise, you can't rely on the fact that you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, totally. So you've obviously seen so many bloggers and influencers, probably a lot of them from infancy and from launch, come into the space. So I'm curious, like, for your clients that have found a lot of success in the blogging world, what do you think really differentiates them?
So I love this question because it kind of makes me emotional, because I have seen so many incredible women build businesses from scratch. And I kind of remember them from the days where they tell me that they were nervous for starting something because will anybody like it, or, you know, scared to actually follow their dream. And to see them actually follow it and people kind of resonate is like the best feeling for me. Mm-hmm. And for the ones that really build successes out of their business, the most important thing is, and it kind of is a cliche because everyone's kind of saying it right now, but it is the most important thing, which is authenticity. You know, being authentic in what you're trying to do and not copying others. And that's really difficult to do because I think sometimes you think you're being authentic, but you're not. Mm-hmm. Especially within this space, which is very competitive. You see other people doing things and you feel that you must do those as well to be successful. And, you know, I found that sometimes in even running CD, thinking, okay, well, other companies are doing X, Y, Z, so so should I. But when I've done things like that, it's never worked. Mm-hmm. And what's always worked is when I've always stayed true to myself. So yep. For me, the ones who have found success is always staying true to themselves and listening to that inner voice, you know, yeah. Telling them what it is they really should be doing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's awesome advice, especially now with the landscape just being so, so saturated. And you're right. I think often you may not even realize that, you know, you're not being true to yourself. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you are, you know, ripping off someone's outfit head to toe, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. It is.
Yeah. No, most definitely. And I think sometimes what happens is you don't realize that maybe you started authentically and then you started to pivot unintentionally because you're not actually taking time to reflect on where you're at. So one advice I always give people is to really give yourself some dedicated time to look at your business as a overview, like from the top, because you're mm-hmm. working in it all the time. You're creating content, you're taking imagery, you're editing them. So sometimes it's easy when you're seeing things, especially on Instagram, mm-hmm. you know, oh, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. So dedicating a bit of your week to actually overviewing your business, seeing what you've achieved and, mm-hmm. and saying to yourself, okay, is this in line with what I'm trying to do or is it not? If it is, fantastic. If it's not, then you need to pivot.
Yeah, totally. It's so true. Even just taking the time to like reflect on that, like carving out literal like thinking time.
Exactly.
That's so fair. So through the years, the last 5 years, I think your seat is so unique because I feel like you've really seen sort of this influencer marketing landscape like come to life from like start to finish. I know I started my blog and brand 4 years ago mm-hmm. when Instagram wasn't that big yet. You know, it was just starting to kind of take off. So I'm curious from your standpoint, how you've seen the landscape change in the last few years, both globally and from like a UK perspective.
So I've seen the landscape change so much. There's the biggest emphasis on Instagram now, much to my dismay. I can't go to any meeting. I can't go anywhere without speaking about Instagram. And sometimes it saddens me because You know, I was having lunch with my friend the other day who is an influencer, and we was talking about how Instagram is so prevalent in the space right now. And what upsets me is because, you know, these incredible people have built up these audiences that are theirs. You know, it's your audience you've created for them, but yet you don't get access to them. But they're yours. So to me, as a business, if I look at it as a business owner, it's like me building up my customer base, but I only get a percentage of, I can only get access to a percentage of them. As a business owner, that's insane. You know, I need access to all of my customers. I need to understand the habits of all of my customers in order for me to make the best business decisions. And for a lot of influencers who have spent so much time really cultivating their Instagram, especially because it, you know, a lot of the time it became a bit of a vanity thing because you can see the number, you can see the growth. With a blog, it's a lot more hard work to grow a following on a blog. So you keep pumping yourself into this platform that is now pretty much against you. It really does sadden me, but I do feel like there is a bit of a shift because I'm having many, many conversations about the fact that people aren't happy about that and they need to kind of regain control. And for me, I've been preaching since the dawn of time about keeping the control of your own audience. It's yours. It's nobody else's.
Right. Mm. That's so true. And so that leads me right into sort of my next question about like kind of blogs maybe taking a back burner. Mm-hmm. So do you see that shifting a little bit or starting to shift?
So I saw for a certain kind of, a certain sector of the market that blogs did take a back burner. People's blog traffic was deteriorating as their Instagram was growing. And it was funny because people would say to me, oh, you know, the reason why I'm not working on my blog anymore is because people aren't going on blogs anymore. And I was like, no, the reason why people aren't going on your blog is because you stopped posting on it. Or you posted exactly the same thing that you did on Instagram. So why did somebody need to go over to your blog for any additional content? So it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy to be like, okay, well, actually, me just spending all my time on Instagram is justified because of this reasoning. But yet, because we look after hundreds and hundreds of bloggers and we get access to all of the analytics, we can clearly see that that is not the case. You know, when they do have the right type of niche, people are maintaining and growing their audiences. And if that was the case, then all of the large publishers, Refining 29, Who What Wear, all of these large publishers would give up. They'd all just be on Instagram as well, if that didn't make sense.
Right.
So it was mostly in kind of the fashion and style space that Instagram became such a big thing, and they kind of neglected the blog. Mm-hmm. But in so many other spaces, especially within travel, the mummy space, the food space, they're absolutely booming continuously.
That's really interesting. Okay, cool. And I mean, I love what you said too, and I think it's so true. It's like taking control back when it comes to your business.
Yeah.
So would you say that's, you know, putting more effort into your website and sort of making that more of a focus and like growing your email subscriber lists and that kind of thing?
Yeah, most definitely. I think email is such a great way to actually capture your audience. Your email list is kind of like your own CRM, so your customer relationship management tool. That's what every business use. We have a CRM tool for all of our customers, and you as a blogger or an influencer or whatever should have your own. And the start of that is an email list, because that means that you know who each and every one of the people are, and you can make informed decisions based on that information.
Okay, cool. I love that. A last question for you. If there's someone who's interested in Chloe Digital and maybe they want to see if it might be a right fit, like what's the best way for them to learn more about you or sort of inquire?
Definitely. Well, they can email us at cdbabe@chloedigital.com, and they'll get a lovely response. They can ask any questions that they want, even if they just kind of want some advice, anything like that. They can just send us an email. They can DM us on Instagram if they want to @chloedigital, or they can use the contact form on our site.
Okay, perfect. And then lastly, where can everyone find you on Insta, keep up with you?
So you can keep up with me. My Instagram handle is @chloeadelia, and if you want to drop me an email, it's just chloe@chloedigital.com, and I'm quite open. People email me all the time, and I'm just always happy to offer advice.
Okay, thank you so much for the awesome tips, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Em. It was so good.
So good. All right, thanks everyone for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, and we will catch y'all next time. Bye.